This is Jim Inkster. Thank you for being with us for Talk Louisiana. Your number is 877-217-5757. You can email us talk@talklouisiana.org. Signature support comes from Brian Lowe Financial. Ray Strother is with us, the celebrated political consultant, Hall of Famer, Louisiana raised, born in Texas, but came here from Port Arthur to LSU, where he was editor of the Reveille, then went on to a distinguished career in political consulting that continues in his own way. And his son now, Dane, is one of the most celebrated Democratic political consultants in the country. Ray is joining us from his home in Bozeman, Montana. And he, like most of the rest of us, is following what's going on in the U.S. Senate. Today's New York Times puts it this way. The White House and Senate Republicans are working aggressively to discount damaging revelations from John R. Bolton and line up votes to block new witnesses from testifying in President Trump's impeachment trial in a push to bring the proceeding to a swift close. As the Senate opened a two-day, 16-hour period of questioning from senators, the president laced into Bolton, his former national security advisor, whose unpublished manuscript contains an account that contradicts the impeachment defense. The president described Bolton on Twitter as a warmonger who had begged for his job, was fired, and then wrote a nasty and untrue book. The president of the United States talking about truthfulness. Raymond Strother, what do you think?
I think that the book Bolton wrote must be filled with dynamite someplace. And the White House has had it, as we know, since early December or late December, I don't remember. So they know exactly what's in it, and they're desperate not to allow it to be published. Or I think they're trying to stop the publication now, which they're going to have a big problem with the First Amendment. But he does contradict. But let me say this. It really doesn't matter. He contradicts everything that the president has said about his involvement in Ukraine or his demands on Ukraine, but it's cast in stone. He's going to be found not guilty by the Senate. We've known that now since day one, and nothing has changed. So I hate to be a fatalist, but nothing's changed.
Yeah, it's not going to happen with 67 votes needed for conviction on the two articles of impeachment, but symbolically, it would mean something if a majority voted for witnesses. Bill Clinton, of course, took great delight in the Senate not getting a majority on either one of the counts against him in 1999, and the same Republicans who were saying Clinton's got to go, he's got to go, people like Lindsey Graham in 1999, are now saying that what this president did not equal what that president did. Ray, how do you see that?
Well, you know, I forget which philosopher it was, maybe Thoreau, said, I contradict myself, so I contradict myself. doesn't seem to bother any of them that they're being contradicted. I've been in an interesting position in that my wife has had flu for a week, and so I've been tethered to the house. I've stayed right here, and I've watched almost every minute of it, and it was maddening to watch. Because first of all, it was terribly repetitious, but secondly, it was terribly predictable. But nothing is predictable, or nothing is outrageous as what happened yesterday with Dershowitz. I don't know if you saw that, but he in effect said that you can't impeach the president, and he can do anything he wants. He can deal with foreign powers. He can take help from foreign countries for his campaign. He can do anything he wants. And that was Alan Dershowitz. So I found that the most shocking thing of all yesterday.
And Dershowitz, of course, is totally contradicting what he said more than 20 years ago when President Clinton was impeached on committing perjury, allegedly, when he was questioned about a consensual relationship with Monica Lewinsky. This president has basically admitted now to extortion and to bribery, and his lawyers say that's okay, it's not an impeachable offense, and that he was doing this because he was trying to help our country, because he's a great president, and he's trying to help our country by being reelected. That is essentially the defense at this point, and people like John Neely Kennedy and William Morgan Cassidy are buying that, and I'm sure they're looking at polls which show the president remains popular in Louisiana. And also, his popularity has risen in the last few weeks nationally. He's right at 45%. in the Real Clear Politics conflation of polls, Ray, and he won the election 4 years ago with 46% of the votes, so he's about where he was in 2016 when he won the election.
That's right. Nothing's really changed. The alienated voters are still alienated, and Trump has become their champion. So nothing has changed. I say that with dismay. Now, your senators there, Cassidy and Kennedy, I'm not going to say they have conviction or they have great character or anything like that, but they do have fear, and they're afraid of this man. They're like most of the senators, they're afraid of Trump. And because for them to get elected, even in a state like Louisiana that's very pro-Trump, they have to have a solid base to run on, and they don't want to in any way endanger that. So, you know, are we going to accuse them of lack of courage? Nah, I'd probably accuse them of survival.
Well, Kennedy, of course, has really dug in, and here's a guy who 16 years ago was supporting John Kerry for president, and John Kennedy has stated that he thinks the president is more truthful than John Bolton. Now, the president, of course, media outlets have documented the number of lies he's told, and they're in the several thousands, and he lies about little things. He lies about his height, for example. You know, he says he was 6'4". Well, if you saw him standing next to Joe Burrow, the LSU quarterback, is a head taller than the president, and he claims to be 6'4". So somebody's not telling the truth. Ray Strother, John Bolton is a nefarious character himself, and it's kind of curious that the Democrats are latching on to him. But it is remarkable how politics tends to trump everything.
Yeah, I'm not a fan of John Bolton in any way. But he's always stood for something, and I've always disagreed with him, but he stood firmly for it, and I think in his way, an honest way. So he's a man of some courage, and it's going to require a lot of courage to release this book, I think. So, you know, I'm not going to defend Bolton, but I'm dying to see what the book says. I'm reading the other book right now, written by
Philip Rucker, yeah.
Philip Rucker, and it's about the Trump administration, and it's fascinating. I think that, in fact, what is the name of that book, Jim?
Well, we have talked about it on the air, and in the book, the president says, according to Philip Rucker, in front of several other people who are quoted, that he thinks it's highly unfair that U.S. businesses are prohibited from bribing companies abroad to do business. And that is something that some would find curious. The book is A Very Stable Genius.
A Very Stable Genius. and he had a co-author, but I know Philip Rucker, and he's a very fine reporter.
And a guy who, up until now, if you notice at these press conferences, the president rarely calls anybody by name. And he usually only does it if he doesn't like somebody or if he does like it. And up until now, he would very favorably call on Philip Rucker. I think that's going to change. And Ray, I also have a feeling that John Bolton's days as a Fox pundit are over. They're not numbered. They're over.
It's over completely. He will be he'll be persona non grata in the Fox studios. Believe me.
Doug on Highland, you're on the air with Ray Strother. Hi, Doug.
Yes, good morning. You know, we're seeing so many unprecedented things here. It's really hard not to take a pretty dark view of this and wonder whether we're actually seeing the end of the republic here. If this president is beyond the law, and that's what we're hearing, not the president or a president, but this president is beyond the law, the next step is that he's beyond elections. And we may well see that later this year, depending on how things go.
What precedent does this set? Thank you, Doug.
It sets a terrible precedent. But the most dangerous thing is he truly believes he's beyond the law. It isn't something he's come up with in the last few weeks. He believes he's above the law. And I think it sets a precedent. If you can't impeach a president for anything, is what Dershowitz, in effect, said. That means the president can be a despot, he can be a dictator, he can be anything he wants to do. In fact, I heard someone say that, according to Dershowitz, President Trump could give away the nuclear secrets to Russia, hand it to him in an envelope, and could get away with it simply because he'd say it's in my interest and therefore it's in the national interest because I am the state.
Jim and Walker, we're going to a break, but Jim, we're sliding you in. Go for it.
Thank you. Gentlemen, good morning. I think one thing that the Republicans need to be very, very careful about is that the stance that they're taking, and that is abrogating Congress's constitutional duty of oversight, that this is going to come back to bite them in the behind, and it's probably going to come back to bite them in the behind very soon.
877-217-5757 is your number. Thank you for calling, Jim. We'll be back in 90 seconds with Ray Strother. This is Jim Inkster. Pleased to have you with us for Talk Louisiana, another segment with Ray Strother. 877-217-5757. Dan downtown. Dan, you're on the air with Raymond Strother.
Yeah, Mr. Strother, you're very praiseworthy in your autobiography of the integrity of John Stennis. I'm wondering, do you think that he would have voted to remove, one, Bill Clinton, and then, two, Donald Trump?
John
Well,
Stennis.
That's speculative, but I think so. I do think so. One thing he told me just before he died, I was talking to him. We got to be very good friends. I'd go over to the Senate and sit with him after he'd lost his leg to diabetes. And one time he was reminiscing. He said, you know, the mistake I made early on in this, because of where I was from, I guess, but I wasn't kind enough to women and African-Americans. He said, I'm ashamed of it. So a man who could admit that to himself would perhaps do the right thing in this case. That's all I can say about that.
You represented Governor Roy Barnes of Georgia, and he lost his gig because he took down the Confederate flag. And now we have a president, of course, who has done any number of things that singularly could have destroyed other politicians. An affair with a porn star, paying her hush money, not claiming it as a campaign expenditure, taking money from his foundation, being fined several million dollars for taking money that was earmarked for veterans and spending it on himself, like oil paintings and that sort of thing. And now this, collaborating with a foreign power, actually trying to extort a foreign power into smearing a political adversary, and he's getting away with it. And he will be found not guilty. He will be acquitted by the United States Senate, and our two senators, Cassidy and Kennedy, will vote to acquit. How does he do it?
Fear. Bob Woodward wrote a book with that title, Fear. People are afraid of him because he's a vindictive and mean-tempered person, and he'll go after anybody. You know, his going after Joe Biden, for example, I don't know. It may hurt Joe Biden, or it may give Joe Biden the nomination because it's he's able to say, now, I wonder why the president's so frightened of me, and it may give him the nomination. But there's one unknown always. And I was listening to John Della Volpe from Harvard, the Harvard polling. And he was talking about the Smith poll, which was Mr. Smith goes to Washington poll, done, started by Pat Cadell. And he said that 84% of Americans feel a great alienation to Washington. So look down the Democratic list and tell me who could actually claim to be outside of Washington. There's only one. And I'm, you know, all of a sudden I'm wondering about these Iowa caucuses. I've been to Iowa. I've sat in the caucuses. I've seen the caucuses. I played poker with the reporters at night after the caucuses. So I know how they work. And they can change on a dime. So I'm wondering who's going to, if Joe can take advantage of this presidential rant, which he seems to be doing right now, he can get the nomination. But the person who might be more electable is the person who is more alien from Washington.
Well, how much does Iowa mean? It helped President Obama, as we know, probably won him the election. If Hillary Clinton had lost to Bernie Sanders, which she almost did 4 years ago in Iowa, quite likely Bernie would have been the nominee of the Democrats. Iowa quite often plays an outsized role for a state with very few African Americans and a state that now has trended Republican. It was a state, a longtime Democratic stronghold. Michael Dukakis won in Iowa in 1988, but Iowa will go to Trump in 2020 most likely. Why is Iowa so important?
Iowa's a thorn in the Democratic Party's side. They would love to do away with these caucuses because if you think about it, very few people decide who the nominee is going to be in Iowa. And if there's a filter, people who get up, wade through the snow, and go to sit with 15 or 20 other people, and that's how it works, and houses and fire stations all across the state, are dedicated people. They tend to be liberal, very liberal. They tend to be angry, and they tend to vote for outsiders. So I've sat and listened to them. And remember, when you get there, it isn't just who you're supporting when you get there. If your candidate doesn't get 15% of the vote in that caucus, you have to choose a second choice. And often that second choice rules the day. That was our case with Gary Hart. We didn't run first in Iowa. We ran a close second. But then because of that, it was a springboard into New Hampshire. But I think Iowa is a problem that really changes the complexion of the candidacy of the Democratic candidacy, and I very much would like to see the system change. But as much as we've tried to do it, it's almost impossible.
877-217-5757. In our remaining moments with Ray Strother, Tracy at the Capitol notes in your book that Dan also referenced, Falling Up, that you said as a kid you prayed to Harry Truman. Now, do you think, and Dan? Not Dan, but Tracy asks if there are kids praying to Donald Trump right now.
I think so. I think he's become a God figure to a lot of people. And I think their children, if they pay attention to their parents, and there are a lot of, particularly in rural areas, are probably praying to Trump and then saying, oh, okay, Jesus, if you're watching, if you're listening, you too. So I think that's possible.
Well, as I mentioned, 17 nights ago in New Orleans when LSU won the national championship over Clemson, 42-25 at the Superdome, the only thing the Clemson fans and the LSU fans agreed on, the almost all-white crowd in the Superdome, was their love of Donald John Trump. When he and his lovely First Lady wife, Melania, cascaded across the floor of the Superdome, it was pandemonium, Ray Strother. A sea of orange and gold and purple just cheering on and chanting, USA, USA, embodied by Donald John Trump.
That's exactly right and predictable. You can predict that because you look at the political leanings of Louisiana and South Carolina. I wasn't surprised at all, but remember when he went to the World Series of the Nats game, he was booed soundly.
Yeah, well, that was a city where he got... He didn't get 5% in Washington, D.C.
It depends on where he is. That's what I'm trying to say. If he goes to a purely red state like Louisiana, like South Carolina, he's going to get that kind of treatment.
And the Southeastern Conference with its 11 states, all of which went for Donald Trump.
And will again.
Maybe Florida. Maybe. I don't know. But probably for Trump, who is now a Floridian. 150 electoral votes in those states. And then when you add in the states like your state of Montana and Wyoming and Idaho and go down the list in these western states, Utah, he's going to carry those as well. Alaska, he's at about 200 before anything is counted, and so he has quite a base of support, and it'll come down to five or six states again. So all the attention, all the campaign money will be focused on those states. Steve Wynnum asks, what about Michael Bloomberg? Does he have a fighting chance? What do you think, Ray?
Well, I just described who might emerge, someone outside Washington, D.C., anti-establishment person, and that would be Bloomberg. He's running an anti-gun ad during the Super Bowl, and he's paid $10 million for it. And he's a guy who could be like Trump. Remember, nobody thought Trump had a chance in the world, and he won the nomination. It's an outside thing, but Bloomberg has enough money and he can fasten on to or absorb that conflict that we have with Washington, because he's not Washington, and he has a chance. I mean, is it a 10-1 shot? Yeah, something like that, 10-1 against him. But he has a shot.
Well, it's always a pleasure to catch up with Ray Strother. We'll be calling frequently in 2020 as we move toward the election, now fewer than 40 weeks away. And in addition to John Stennis, this man represented people like Russell Long, Dennis DeConcini, Gary Hart, Al Gore, Bill Clinton, Edwin Edwards, John McKithen, Buddy Romer, Mark White. Quite a career in American politics and a body of work as a consultant that is rivaled by few others. And his autobiography, one of the best ever by a political consultant, Falling Up. Thank you for joining us today, Ray Strother.
Thank you so much.
We'll be back with Mark Ballard, Capitol Bureau Chief for The Advocate. Of course, we'll talk about the impeachment and also about the feud between the governor and the attorney general. Now the news with Karen Henderson on 89.3 WRKF.